There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday. And coming up at some point, most likely this hour, the way it seems to be news coming out of Pennsylvania, we will hear what the sentencing is for Bill Cosby. You heard earlier the level here where they have identified him as a sexual predator. I mean, this is it's so strange for me as a child of the 80s to be saying that. I mean, Bill Cosby? But that's the situation, and we're waiting for that as we get that information out. But and this would be, if y'all went in on the action, I don't know. If y'all went in, people have been bouncing around how long they think, not how long he will serve, not how long he will be sentenced for today. Dalton had said this morning, 8 years. So he's sticking with 8 years. Our buddy Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, author of Wicked Mobile. What's your guess here?
Well, you're gonna hold me coming in cold. I told you 10 off the air, so I guess I'll go with that.
Okay.
Of course, that means if we're playing The Price is Right, you know, you would be well advised to bet one day.
Yeah, that would be smart. But I'm going 5 years.
We're all over, so you win because we're all over.
Yeah, I'm going 5 years. We'll see when that news comes out. We'll let everybody know. All right, so much to talk about, and played the bulk of President Trump's speech to the UN General Assembly last hour, and a couple things stood out to me, and I want to hear from you on this. Number one, so a lot of people focused on the laugh track that went on from members of the UN General Assembly, but also calling out who was called out and who was complimented. I think that stood out to me. Praise for the Koreas. Iran getting the shaken finger pretty hard. China getting a little bit of both in that mix. Venezuela being pointed out in this. Did I miss somebody?
Germany was called out.
Oh, yeah, Germany. Yeah, the Russian. Poland got the attaboy. Germany got a bad girl, right?
The Gulf Arab states got an attaboy.
Yeah.
Israel got an attaboy.
Yeah.
The UN itself, you know,
we
came in for a lot of criticism.
You know, okay, absolutely. But you're talking about the Gulf states. Let's think about Saudi Arabia specifically. This is one where I have just a hard time. I just have a hard time because I can't pretend the emperor has, you know, a fantastic set of clothes and celebrate the Saudis. I just, you know, I can't do it. At the same time, the Saudis, a big player in OPEC, who got called out. So, I mean, the Saudis got an attaboy and a stern talking to at the same time in this speech, but the Saudis say, well, you know, they're making great strides. What, they now women can legally drive in Saudi Arabia. Great strides.
I just 2 points on that. One, this is perfectly consistent with Trump's real politic, transactional nature of foreign policy. He approaches the world, on what can you do for us kind of basis. And we're going to take countries as they are and deal with them. And as long as they're cooperative on things that we want in our national interest, we're not really going to spend a lot of time, you know, talking about their internal human rights records. And that's just the Trump policy across the world. But number two, I mean, the new leadership in Saudi Arabia really has taken some steps at reform. Now, we would look at it and say this is, totally antithetical to our values. But the fact is, the fact that women can drive is progress, compared to what it was. And there are other things that that they're trying to do to modernize Saudi Arabia. Now, it's still a long way, even from the kind of the median policies in the Muslim world, even. But they've made some progress.
Yeah, I mean, I want to make sure. I mean, I'm not being completely. I don't have blinders on. I expect Saudi Arabia to have the same ideas as Western Europe or the United States. But I mean, they can look over at Jordan, right? I mean, they're not at that point.
No. I mean, obviously not. Look, Trump made a decision very early on in his presidency that his approach to the Middle East was going to prioritize Israel, which is the one true democracy mm-hmm. in the region. And secondarily to that, he was going to try to build a coalition against Iran. And he wanted to isolate Iran. Of course, he pulled out the nuclear deal with Iran. And so everything he's done in the Middle East has been to try to orchestrate an Arab-Israeli alliance against Iran.
Yeah.
So everything else has taken second-class status to that goal.
Yeah, and he was pushing that hard today and talking to other neighboring countries, telling them, number one, talking about what the Iranians have done to their own people, what the regime there has, and what they mean to do to their neighbors as well. Does this do anything? Does this move the needle?
I mean, I don't think the speech itself has moved the needle, but really pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal is a pretty big deal, as they say, and it's had some impact already. There was a lot of skepticism as to what the United States could do unilaterally on this, since everyone else is sticking into it. But this has imposed real costs on Iran, even though we don't have a lot of bilateral trade with them. The United States has a lot of leverage, and our threats to sanction other entities that do business with Iran puts companies in a position of having to choose, do you want to do business with us or do you want to do business with Iran? And the United States is just a much more important market than Iran in most contexts. So it has had real impact. You can see it in oil prices, which have gone up because Iran is selling less. You can see it in the economy of Iran, which is in much worse shape just in the last few months. So it is having an impact. Now, the pressure was much stronger when we had the whole international coalition on board before the Iran nuclear deal, but it's not nothing.
Right, I mean, but we are seeing, at least the description is part of the pressure on the upward pressure on oil prices, not just OPEC saying they're not going to ramp up production, but it's what's not hitting the world market from Iran. It's a million barrels a day or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you take that out. Now, I mean, Iran, it's not like Iran's selling no oil, but they're having trouble selling oil. One sign that you can see that this is working is there's a bunch of oil stacking up in oil tankers off of the coast of Iran because they're drilling the oil, they're producing it, but they've lost their some of their customer base. So what they do is they put it in tankers that just don't go anywhere. And this is what they did. That was their strategy during when the sanctions were in place prior to the nuclear deal, and it's starting to happen again. So that's a sign. If they've got oil tankers that are loaded up but they're not going anywhere, that's a sign that the sanctions are working. And oil is the most important, by far, export that Iran has, and the source of its money that it uses to foment terrorism in the region. So by that standpoint, it's working to at least some degree. Now, what I've always said is, the horse was already out of the barn, so to speak, because we unfroze all those assets and Iran got all that money back. So you can't undo that damage. The money they got from that, they've been able to plow back into their terrorism network. All this can do is trying to cut them off at the knees going forward.
All right, coming right back, more with Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, author of Wicked Mobile. We'll delve into the Kavanaugh interview last night with Martha McCallum. Also, what will or will not happen on Thursday? Will Dr. Ford be there? And will they call for the vote then? Also, we'll tackle a real interesting story, one of many that he has up at LifeSet.com. What liberals ignore, America's immigration system contributes to income inequality.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Rolling on here online at FM Talk 106.5.com, where you get this the stream right there on your computer, or download that TuneIn Radio app, a great app for your Android or iPhone. It's free. It's pretty much bulletproof, and it even has a feature where it'll pause the audio if you get a call coming in or something like that, and you can pick it back up. TuneIn Radio, the name of that app. Also, I'd like to direct you over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065, and multiple other platforms for the radio station where the big unveiling is happened now for our, how many years? We've been doing this for years and years now, the Ultimate Tailgate Contest. This year, over $6,000 in prizes for this.
Some good stuff, too. Yeah. And it truly is the ultimate tailgate prize package. And whether you're tailgating in the parking lot right outside of a stadium or in your own backyard and living room, either way, you'll be the best tailgater around if you win this grand prize, because we got a nice TV from Bailey's TV. You know, one of those QLED 4K HD. This is a Samsung 55-inch TV that we got. It's going to be awesome. Also, Fairhope Brewing Company, they have a nice package of craft beer and merchandise.
Yeah, some of their cool clothing.
A cart rental from Cart Doctor, which you can ride around the parking lot if you're out there tailgating or, you know, the neighborhood. Also, who else we have? Because I lost it right
Carrot
here.
Carrot Patch has those. Either you can pick Alabama or Auburn or other team logo.
Yeah, 14
Tennessee, I guess.
If you want. I don't recommend doing that this year, but that's a 14-karat gold team pendant. And then Old Time Feed, which we've given these away from Old Time Feed before.
People
just
love
amazing, extra-large Adirondack chairs. And when I say extra-large, they're big.
Yeah, if you're a smaller of stature, you look like Gilda Radner used to on Saturday Night Live in the big chair. You can check out those details, of course, on the front page of our Facebook page. You can go to our website, different platforms. You'll have a chance to kind of go through there and get your list of places you're going to stop by, because those registration boxes are there at the Cart Doctor and Old Time Feed, Fairhope Brewing Company, Carrot Patch, and Bailey's. So make sure you stop on by, drop your name in.
Yeah, got to do it.
All right.
And news just came down. You were talking with Brendan earlier. We all made our guesses for how long Bill Cosby would be sentenced
today.
Okay,
so the sentencing has been done.
That's correct. You said 5 years. I said 8. Brendan said 10. Turns out we're all right. We all win.
What? How can Brendan, do you hear? How can we all be right?
He was sentenced 3 to 10 years in state prison. That just happened. Sentencing announced for Bill Cosby, 3 to 10 years. So I see the cameras at the courthouse. I think they're waiting to see Bill Cosby led away in handcuffs. He will be put in handcuffs.
He goes straight to prison.
Straight to prison. I think he will have the opportunity to appeal, and he could be out of prison if he appeals the sentencing. I'm not sure exactly how that will work, but now cameras waiting. We will see America's dad let out of the courtroom in handcuffs.
Wow. I mean, Brendan, seriously, you're like me. We're the same age, child of the 80s. I mean, if I had a time machine back to us in the 80s and said, Dr. Huxtable's going to prison.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I remember Donald Trump from the 80s as well, though. So if you'd said Donald Trump was going to be president.
Right. Yeah. We would have told you.
A lot from the 80s that I would have been surprised by. But does this mean, is this the equivalent of every child getting a trophy that we all are right on this?
3 to 10. I don't get it. It's, but it says sentenced to between 3 and 10 years in prison.
Prosecutors were asking for 5 to 10.
And I think what that means, just for listeners that are confused, is what they call indeterminate sentencing, which a lot of states use. And that is, you're sentenced to a range, and then based on your behavior and oftentimes decisions of the parole board, you'll get out, between those two poles, depending on a whole bunch of factors, but they give you a maximum and a minimum. So 3 years might be his first eligibility under parole rules, for instance.
All right, I want to shift gears here to an interview last night on Fox News, and it was Judge Brett Kavanaugh, his wife, and Martha McCallum asking the questions, and Kavanaugh saying he's not going anywhere.
I'm not going to let false accusations drive us out of this process, and we're looking for a fair process where I can be heard and defend my integrity, my lifelong record of promoting dignity and equality for women, starting with the women who knew me when I was 14 years old. I'm not going anywhere.
Brendan, he's not giving up, which you can imagine under the things that are being thrown at him. Maybe a lesser person would say, I'm out.
Well, to withdraw at this point would be an admission of guilt. So further impugn his reputation. And let's not forget, too, he's up for probably the best job in America. I think being a Supreme Court justice might be the best job. It's a pretty decent salary, and it's a lifetime position, and you're basically accountable to no one. It's a pretty good gig.
Yeah, and he's gonna fight. And this is something you and I have talked about a couple times. I brought back up this morning. I have, I think, on every morning show when this has come up, is the fact that we're not talking about subtlety here or nuance. We have an accusation that these things happened, and we have a Brett Kavanaugh that's not saying, well, she must have interpreted it differently. He's saying he wasn't there and it didn't happen. I mean, that's pretty cut and dry to me.
It's pretty cut and dried, and I think we've gone over this before, but either she's making this up, he's lying, something did happen to her, but she's mistaken in some way, and it wasn't him, or something happened, and perhaps he was so drunk that he doesn't remember it. I mean, those are sort of the four possibilities that it could be, and you know, this is the problem with adjudicating something that it happened as long ago as this. You know, it's you know, memories fade, witnesses go away, it's hard to discern the truth, and you know, what we're left with in this is his adamant denials and her accusation, which is just as adamant, and then three other witnesses that were supposedly there who say they weren't or don't remember it. And then the fact that she apparently told a therapist about an incident back in 2012 in marriage counseling. It's hard for a neutral, fair observer who hasn't already picked sides, which describes what most of the U.S. Senate, to look at that and discern the truth, I think.
So, and if we are going to try to come at this as a fair arbiter, I mean, because the discussion seems to be more on this nuanced, and you and we've had this discussion of, you know, what is the what's the level, what's the bar set for somebody, how far back do you go if they're going for a job, let alone the best job in the country, as you said. There's that discussion, but to me that discussion really is an academic one compared to this one. Is basically, he says he wasn't there, she says he was. I mean, maybe have a better chance of getting to the bottom of this.
Yeah, and again, I mean, unless an eyewitness steps forward to say, yes, I was there, I remember that, it's very hard to, it's hard to defend against, and if it did happen, it's hard to prove, because, again, it just comes down to two people's word. But this is why I thought that, having this hearing is kind of a silly exercise, because these are not dispassionate fact finders. These are partisan United States senators who have already made up their mind about how they're going to vote on this in most cases. And what we're going to get is a similar performance, I think, from Judge Kavanaugh under oath in front of the committee. And I fully expect that Christine Blasey Ford is similarly going to come off as credible and believable. And then nothing else. So, you have to determine whose story do you believe and who do you disbelieve. And it just from the reaction of the past week, the answer to that question seems to be determined by whether you wanted Judge Kavanaugh on the bench in the first place or not.
Right. And I guess a couple more questions. Here's number one. Will Dr. Ford be there? What's your guess? Be there on Thursday? And if
my guess is she will.
Okay.
The Democrats are trying to delay this because of these second allegations that were contained in that New Yorker article over the weekend, but the Republicans seem to have run out of patience with this. So as long as they press forward with the hearing, I just can't imagine her not testifying after all this, because it would discredit her story, rightly or wrongly. If she did not show up, people would conclude, I think, that it was a setup, that she wasn't willing to back it up under oath. I'd be stunned if she doesn't show up to testify.
Oh, and then when does the vote happen? How soon do you think they call for this vote?
Yeah, I mean, the vote will happen as, assuming Jeff Flake is on board, a senator mm-hmm. from Arizona who's on the committee, the vote will happen as soon as Republicans legally can make it happen. And then it will go to the Senate, and the the vote there will happen as soon as possible, as well. Really, I mean, it's important to remember, this all comes down to three senators. They're doing all this for three senators who are not decided. Jeff Flake, who's important because he's on the committee.
Murkowski.
Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, who are important because you can only afford to lose one Republican vote if you don't get any Democratic votes.
Are you going to get Manchin? Do you think they get Manchin? You think Manchin votes with the Republicans?
I think that they don't get any Democrats if they have to be the deciding vote. Maybe you get a Democrat or two if they're not the deciding vote. But you know, after all this, it's really hard to see any Democrat voting yes, I think, really under any circumstances. And it's a party line vote. And really, I mean, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and Jeff Flake, if they're not going to ultimately support this nomination, should probably be going to the White House right now saying, pull this thing because we're not going to vote yes. And then, you know, then they can, you know, move on quicker. And if dragging us out, if they're ultimately going to vote no, is not doing anyone any good.
All right. As that goes forward, any, you know, we've talked about this in the past. Some kind of, we got about 45 seconds here. Any kind of plan that the Democrats could hatch going forward that would delay this through the midterm? Anything? Any kind of even crazy cracked scheme?
Well, there's nothing the Democrats can really do as long as the Republicans are on board with it. If the nomination goes down in some way, either because it's voted down or because they pull the nomination because it's clear they don't have the votes, then it's guaranteed to go after the midterms because there's simply not enough time to nominate someone else and get them through the confirmation process. You're only talking about, you know, a little bit more than a month away at this point. So, you know, it's this or broke. And then if it goes down, then I guess the Republicans make it a campaign issue and hope to win. But if they lose control of the Senate, I have no doubt that there will be no Supreme Court justice in that seat for 2 years.
Wow. Coming right back, more with Brennan Kirby and a story, What Liberals Ignore, America's Immigration System Contributes to Income Inequality.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 1:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday online, FMTalk1065.com. Our buddy Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, also author of Wicked Mobile, hanging out with us. Speaking of which, Wicked Mobile, people want to pick up a copy. Maybe I heard some story earlier today. Men, more than ever, are doing their Christmas shopping early. So if I wanted to break out of my mold, which I probably won't, but get my Christmas shopping done early, how do I get a copy of the book?
Yeah, you can go to a local bookstore and pick it up. You can get it online. Arcadia Publishing, you can buy direct from the publisher, or you can go to Amazon or other online retailers as well.
All right.
Now available on Kindle, by the way.
Oh, really?
You can get the e-version of the book.
I like that. I like that. That's good. And next thing you know, you're going to do the audiobook, right, where you read it to us.
Yeah, I'll have to get someone better than me. Someone maybe with a radio voice.
Find one of those.
The audiobook.
We'll get the voiceover work there done. All right, I want to talk about this story at LifeSet, and this one actually not having to do with Kavanaugh, but a subject we've talked about for a long time, and a pretty interesting. I love it when you have these stories, which you do quite regularly. Find you know, where there might be some hypocrisy laying there, and this discussion of illegal immigration and immigration in general, what this means for income inequality. You take two ideas that are pretty strong, right, for liberals, that immigration, more immigration, less control of immigration, and at the same time, the problem with income inequality in this country, and you put the two together, and what'd you come up with here?
Yeah, I was interested in this because as you mentioned, those are two pretty strong goals on the left. Income inequality has long been a bugaboo among progressives, and the Census Bureau this month released a whole bunch of data on income and earnings and poverty. And one metric they use is called the Gini coefficient, which is a formula they use to measure income inequality. And so what they do is they take every household income and they plot it on a scale, and they reduce it to a scale between 0 and 1. So 0 would be total equality. Every household had the exact same income.
Like an egalitarian.
And on the other end, on the other end, 1 would be total inequality. One household has all the income, and that would be total inequality.
Okay. Okay.
And so where you fall between those points determines how unequal, you know, how much income inequality there is. And this has been rising in the United States over the last few decades. And there's definitely a correlation between that and mass immigration. If you look at the states that have the highest percentage of foreign-born residents, those states tend to also have the worst income inequality. Now, it doesn't line up perfectly. The southern states tend to have a lot of income inequality, even though they don't have a lot of immigrants. But in general, you see the relationship. California, New York, you know, they're both in the top five in inequality, and they're also in the top five in in the foreign-born population. So you there's a, as they say, correlation does not mean causation, but there's a strong correlation.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth. That's what I was about to ask. Is it just because two things happen at the same time doesn't mean one caused the other?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's important to note here that you know, there's not just one cause of income inequality. It's a very complex, relationship that has to do with a lot of different factors in the economy. But, logically speaking, I think we can say that that immigration plays a role, and particularly low-skill immigration. And some people have researched this. There was an LSU professor who looked at some data a few years ago, and he found not only is there a correlation, but and this is something I didn't do, but what he did is he said that states that have, you know, where the immigrants tend to skew toward the bottom of the scale education-wise, those without high school degrees, they're in income inequality was even greater. So if you're bringing in a lot of people who haven't graduated from high school and don't speak English, it shouldn't be a shock that they are working in jobs that don't pay a lot. So it stretches the income scale down. And then this is a little more controversial, but there's some indication that that their presence in the labor market also drives down wages for native-born Americans that are working those same kinds of jobs. You know, and when you do that, when you have a lot of low-scale immigration, you know, who does that benefit? It benefits the owners of capital and the owners of company because mm-hmm. it reduces their labor costs, which means they make more. So you're also pushing incomes up on the upper end. So you have people that are making higher incomes at the top and lower incomes at the bottom, ergo the inequality.
Yeah, I don't believe this for people who are progressive in thought. I don't believe it for all the people that are running on those platforms. But for some of them, you talk about liberals here, this may be a perfect situation to constantly have a dragon to slay. You know, if they had looked into it this far, and I don't know if they have. I'm not, you know, into like big conspiracies and there's all these backroom meetings. But if you constantly have more immigration, legal, illegal immigration, whatever it is, driving down the wages, then you continue to be able to make a case on two things. Number one, we've got income inequality, and number two, I'm doing everything I can to give freedom for people to come to a better life. But we got to work harder to make this a better life. I mean, there's a little bit of a problem and a solution built in.
Well, and partially this also depends on, how big of a problem is inequality, really. I think you and I have talked before. I'm much less concerned about income inequality than sort of the direction of wages. Flat wages are the problem, not the inequality so much. If my wages are going up at a clip that is outpacing inflation, it really doesn't matter to me if rich people are getting even further ahead. And, on the other side of the coin, if rich people's incomes are dropping, but mine are staying the same, you know, we're becoming more equal, but I'm not actually any better off just because they're worse off. So, that's a point to keep in mind. But, you know, I wrote this because progressives, you know, this is a problem they identify as being a big problem. So if you care about inequality and think that it's a big deal, I think you at least owe yourself to consider the role that immigration might play in that. And again, I mean, it's, this is just a data story. I mean, if you look at it, the states that have the highest income inequality, tend to have the highest percentages of immigrants there. And then I think you sort of have to make a choice. I mean, which do you care about more? Just an open free society where people can come and go as they please, or in inequality? Because, you know, short of some really dramatic wealth redistribution scheme that is probably not politically feasible in this country, it seems like you're just going to have to live with more inequality if you want lots and lots of low-skill immigrants in the country.
Right, maybe that's the, I wouldn't say from liberals, but from leftists, this idea that there shouldn't be any borders to any country. It's all just one big world. That mentality could say, hey, you know what? There's income inequality outside the borders, so we need to have them in here to help. That's how we're going to bring it up, right? They don't just see it as a nation. They see it as a global issue.
Yeah, I mean, and the problem with that is if we are designing our immigration system to try to help foreigners by giving them an entree into a better country and a better economy, you have to just look at the numbers. And, you know, we take about 1 million legal immigrants every year, and about half of them, you know, are actually, you know, high wage earners and educated, so they're not the most desperate. So we take maybe 500,000 poor immigrants legally, and then maybe another 300,000 or so illegal immigrants. You know, if we doubled that, if we tripled that, it would overwhelm our infrastructure here, but would not really be much of a drop in the bucket in terms of global poverty. So if you want to improve global poverty, immigration doesn't seem to be a very effective way to do it.
It's a little bit of what the discussion was today with President Trump at the UN General Assembly, right? How to help out people best is keep them closest to, he was talking about Syrian refugees specifically there, but keep them closest to home.
Yeah, he was talking about refugees, yeah. And it's a good point. It costs something like 12 times as much to resettle a refugee from the Middle East to the United States, and when you look at resettlement costs, you can't just look at the cost of actually moving them here. You have to look at all the government assistance and the welfare that they're immediately eligible for, and you add that up, it's a lot of money. So there's certainly an argument to be made that we can spend that same amount of money abroad helping refugees near their homes, and that money will go a lot further in those countries than resettling a small number of refugees here. And so then, the choice is, do we want to help a small number of people in a really big way by bringing them here, or do we want to help a lot of people in a smaller way by helping them there? And, I think at the very least, that's not necessarily a clear-cut, easy decision, and sometimes I think people, they discount the costs and benefits, and they say that there is an easy decision. You know, it's terrible to cut the refugee cap. We should be doing more. But you have to look at the whole picture and then decide if that's what you really want to do. Because even the United States has limited resources. We can't resettle all of the world's refugees. There's just too many of them. So then the question is, what is the best strategy? So that's sort of a piece of overall immigration. But yeah, it comes down to, who are you? The Harvard professor who has done a lot of research on immigration, and he basically says, who are you rooting for? Is immigration good or bad? It depends on who you're rooting for. Are you rooting for the immigrants? And obviously, it's better for them to come here. Are you rooting for business owners? They benefit from lower labor costs. Are you rooting for upper income Americans who need people to cut their grass and take care of their kids? You know, it benefits them. But it's a hard time making the case that it's helping native-born Americans who are in a similar education profile, i.e. high school dropouts, people who haven't gone beyond high school, because the immigration system is skewed toward that end of the scale, creates more competition for jobs and drives down wages.
There he is, Brendan Kirby, LifeSet.com, author of Wicked Mobile. People want to get in touch with you online. Where do they go?
You can go at Brendan K. Kirby. You can look up Wicked Mobile on the Facebook page and hit me up there as well.
All right. Coming right back. We're getting ready to wrap it up right here on Midday Mobile. Remember, the ultimate tailgate contest, over $6,000 worth of prizes, is online. And you can check it out right now on our Facebook page and website.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
To 10, judge denying bail to Bill Cosby as well. 3 to 10 years for America's Dad. And take a second here. I have not let this completely the paint dry on this in my head, but maybe it's time to go back and make sure you record this or go back and share the podcast, because maybe I'll say something and get me in trouble, right? Everybody's waiting. But I'm bothered, and I shouldn't be bothered any more that this is Bill Cosby than Bill Smith that did this. But I am. Okay, I am. And yeah, child of the 80s, grew up with, of course, you can go back to Fat Albert through the Cosby Show to the Puddin' Pops and the Jell-O. And listen, America's dad was Bill Cosby. And I got to tell you, maybe there was another show, maybe I'm missing something, but I think the Cosby Show was an amazing thing for this country. It was a super popular TV show. For those of you that weren't alive back then, it was like a big deal. Appointment viewing, family show. Families could feel good about the kids watching it, and it was interesting enough that mom and dad could watch it. You know, that's the key to a family show. You can have a show that the kids like and it makes mom and dad fall asleep and drool, or you can have a show that's for mom and dad and the kids can't be in the room. You find a show that back then, I mean, there weren't as many offerings, but there was a show everybody could watch. And it was a show about an American family who happened to be black. There were shows before, weren't the first black families detailed on American television, but it was not about the fact that the Cosbys were black. Fact was, they were a family. They went through family things and same kind of, situation. Now, of course, is it ramped up for TV? Yes. I mean, whose life is as exciting as anybody on TV? But it dealt with issues that were normal, you know, a family with little kids and teenagers and the assassin back and all those things that were just, but the family was black. The show wasn't about the family being black. The show was about them being Americans, right? They're being just regular folks, right? And I think that did, if you go back and look, probably a lot as part of this nation getting on the right track for treating each other equally out there. I really do. And maybe, like I said, I have not let this cement completely dry, so I may come back, somebody's going to be railing at me. But maybe that's one of the things. Number one, America's dad. Number two, I've got this sense of what that one TV show, and listen, he had a whole scope of work, from stand-up comedy to commercials to Fat Albert to all those things. I'm with you. But that show in particular, Cosby Show, I think was important not just as a family show, but as a family show that went a step further, and it's just about a family. They happen to be black. It wasn't, here's a show about a black family. I think that was, at least to me, in my interpretation, and maybe that's one of the reasons why I'm so disappointed and sickened by this with Cosby. But yeah, there it is, 3 to 10 years. There's a sentence. I don't know, maybe when that, you can drop me a line on the text line, see if I'm all wet on this, or if you may agree with it, as I try to maybe put this into a cogent argument and discussion going forward. All right, Feinbaum, speaking of going forward, Feinbaum on the way in just a couple minutes. Do I have time for the... Okay, these are a couple stories. No, Dalton, I cannot get to the one. The eight-legged creature is going to have to wait till tomorrow's show or later on in the week. I do have time for this one, though. I got this from the folks over at WSB in Atlanta, but it's out of Florida, Interlochen, Florida. Now, I'm not saying it's okay to escape from the correctional facility you're in, but here's the story. Florida Department of Corrections inmate walked away from a work crew yesterday morning to get what? What did he get, y'all? I think it drugs or guns or some sweet tea. Sweet tea. Deputies say Taylor Fender, what a cool name. Sad he's a crook. Taylor Fender, 23, of Okaloosa County, like up in our neighborhood, was serving a 5-year prison sentence at Putnam Corrections Institute before this incident. According to Putnam County Sheriff's Office, the crew was working at the State Road 20 and County Road 315 when Fender strolled away and into a nearby Family Dollar where he bought some clothes. Okay, he was doing that, so he wouldn't be in his... I can't believe that people are selling him the clothes while he's in the prison duds, but he is. I love this. They note here, according to officials, an observant resident saw Fender walk into the store and dialed 911. He was in prison. He was in the prison scrubs. Sleuth. The sleuth there detected something might be wrong. Fender then allegedly walked down the road into Poppy's restaurant. At the same time, officials say a deputy just happened to be pulling into the restaurant's parking lot for lunch. As the deputy entered the restaurant, a warning to be on the lookout, or as they like to say, a bolo, for the suspect with Fender's description was released by dispatchers. Sheriff's office tweeted that after ordering and paying for a cup of sweet tea, Fender was arrested and taken into custody. Sweet Tea was reportedly left on the counter of the restaurant. You know, the guy didn't even get his sweet tea for it. I will put this up on the Twitter feed. But, you know, sometimes, I mean, I'm not going soft on crime. I'm not going just, the old boy needed some sweet tea. I think, you know, sometimes he got that hankering for something. And in this case, it was this Taylor Fender down there in Florida. All right, let's see. Well, Dalton, where else do we have it? Do we have it up on the, I know it's on the website, and I know it's on the Facebook page. Will we put it, I'll put it up on my Twitter feed, the link here to go back to the Facebook page, and will we put it on, like, are we going to Instagram? Have we Instagrammed this?
You know, I'm glad you said something. I need to Instagram this right now.
Okay, so the Ultimate Tailgate Prize giveaway is online, ready to go for your edification to get ready to win here through our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065. Also our website with the Ultimate Tailgate Prize giveaway. You'll see that tab right there along the top bar. You click that. Gives you the participating sponsors, how to win, all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to share this on the Twitter feed, and you're going to put it up on the Facebook, on the Instagram.
Instagram, that's right. And even Snapchat. We'll get it rolling on Snapchat.
When are we going to get a Snapchat?
And the boxes are headed out right now. Okay. As we speak, there might already be boxes in some of the locations. It officially starts tomorrow. So right. Tomorrow, if you head over, and this is alphabetical order, head over to Bailey's, Cart Doctor, Fairhope Brewing Company, Carrot Patch Jewelers, and Old Time Feed. Starting tomorrow, per person, you can enter once per day at each location. We'll draw a winner on November 15th for a huge tailgate prize package giveaway.
All right. So there you go. You're lined up and ready to roll for tomorrow. Get the details right now on our social media platforms and websites. Bill Cosby, sentenced to 3 to 10 years, state prison. How about that? Feinbaum all the way next. We'll see you all in the morning for Mobile Mornings.